I'm Grant Fulmer.
Kate, would you give the opening prayer?
Dear kind Heavenly Father, we're thankful for this opportunity to gather out here at Deer Springs Ranch and together as members and as the board. We're grateful for all that Thou has done for us. We're grateful for the opportunity to enjoy nature out here and all that Thou has given us. Please help us to have a great discussion today, keep our emotions in check, and come up to the best solutions for the ranch. These things we ask. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen. Amen.
All right. I'm Brent Fulmer, Lot 117.
Eric Clarkson, Lot 76.
Kate Hoff, 83.
Mike and Tim McNichols, 270.
John Smith, 269.
Repentina Collins, 121.
Castles, 130.
Oh, Jim Moriarty, 26.
Bob Becker, Lot 4.
Did you not say my name? I'm Shanna Moriarty, Lot 22.
The women have to keep quiet.
Whoa. Anybody on the Zoom?
We got Dan, too.
Dirk Clayson, 116.
Michael Jordison, 67.
Ben Clarkson, 50.
Anybody else?
Anybody else on Zoom? On Zoom, we've got a little bit of a breeze. Are you guys hearing okay?
This is showing Zoom.
Yeah.
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Thanks.
The Queens?
Okay.
Bruce and Nancy McQueen, are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Okay.
All right. April, May, Barry, you're up.
All right. I've handed out the meeting minutes for the April meeting, and as I sent out just after the meeting concluded last at the end of the last month. And are there any comments, any changes, any suggestions?
Looks good to me.
Make a motion that we adopt them.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Good. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Okay. We're also up.
Okay. We've had some discussion in the last few meetings about waivers and enforcement. And so I volunteered last time to put together a written analysis and proposal, and I have that here. I'm happy to hand it out. It's 4 pages long to anybody that wants a copy. Let me outline what I think the process is here, just so everybody knows, and then we'll see how it goes moving forward. That makes sense?
Phoenix, would you mind handing those out?
I said they're 2 pages front and back each to anybody that wants one. So, for those of you that haven't been involved, last year the board adopted the requirement that each member each year sign a waiver, which waives any basically right to sue the association for anything that happens, including negligence on the ranch. The idea behind that was to protect, as the association and as board members, as our fiduciary duty to the company, to help protect claims against those assets in case something happens on the ranch. Last meeting, then we had a discussion. Thank you. Last meeting, we had a discussion that an enforcement mechanism for that rule was not adopted and made part of the waiver itself. And so I volunteered to put together an analysis, and my recommendation on what we should do to enforce that rule. There are members, and I've heard from a few, there are members that feel like the waiver is over the top and unnecessary, and they don't like it, and I have input from other members that say it doesn't go far enough, and it needs to be tightened up even further. I'm not, and we're not at this point here to discuss the waiver itself. That's been adopted. But anytime we have rules, by statute, the board has the obligation, and it's also set out in our bylaws, as you'll read in my research, the board has an obligation to enforce those rules. And if there's no enforcement mechanism, then you might as well not have the rule. So I put together some research because there have been questions about whether there can be penalties, whether there can be fines, and what the limitations are. And I put those in writing. As far as the process, I think we need to discuss a little bit today what input we can get from members as to how they feel about the enforcement mechanism, and I'll outline verbally what I've put in the letter, so you don't need to read it right now. Or I'll tell you what it basically says my recommendations are. But I think we need to open it up for members to provide input if they have an alternate suggestion or way, a mechanism to enforce the rule for a week or so. Then we need to put together a written one or two or three proposals, and then have an open forum in the next month's meeting before the board can vote on it. Because in order for the enforcement mechanism to be enforceable, it needs to be made part of the rules, and so it requires a vote of the board. And I don't want to have a vote of the board until we have all member input and take into account everybody's thoughts and feelings. I feel very strongly that a waiver is necessary and it's good business. I know that people feel differently, and I'm not here to twist anybody's arm or convince them to feel differently, but that's kind of the process that I anticipate we'll go through. Some comments today, a written proposal within a week or two, opportunity for members to suggest a written proposal, alternative proposals, and then a discussion and an ultimate vote in the next board meeting. Any questions on the process? That seemed fair to everybody? Anybody object to what I've suggested? All right, let me go through my suggestions on enforcement. The idea behind having a waiver is to limit the liability of the ranch. Now, I've heard from some members, and it's true. In this particular circumstance, the individual interests of a member are not the same as the interests of the company. I recognize that. If we were obligated as board members to look out for the best interest of the members, then we'd all throw the waiver in the garbage and forget about it, because that is not in the best interest of each individual member. But it is in the best interest of the company, and I think it's necessary that we protect the assets and the operation of the ranch for all of our enjoyment to the extent we can. You may or may not know that any government, any local or regional government, including state and federal, county, they all enjoy what's called governmental immunity. What that means is, the theory is, makes no sense to sue yourself. This is simply an attempt for a private immunity, so that we're not suing ourselves or losing assets. Now, with that being said, the idea is to limit liability. And if people are hesitant, which there are, to sign the waiver, then what we have is an increased potential liability. Now, we've been fortunate at the ranch. We've had very few lawsuits related to things happening. But as we get bigger and as more people come to the ranch, I think it's inevitable. Maybe it's my job coming through, but it's inevitable. We'll have to deal with this. And so I think that the best way to address this issue of liability is strongly encourage members to sign the waiver. If they are unwilling to sign the waiver, then they have broken the rules, and the typical and normal first step of a rule being broken is a suspension of ownership rights. those range from voting in elections, use of the cabins, use of other common facilities, water hauling, and other benefits. And we as a board can look at any one of those as far as what's necessary, but it's normal. And I've suggested that we suspend voting rights and participation in ranch activities if a waiver is not signed by March. They're due by the end of March. There is a March 1st. When do we pay our assessments?
Due by March 1st.
That's due by March 1st. So I'm suggesting that we suspend rights from March 1st when it becomes delinquent through the end of the year. The reality is that doesn't address the issue of liability. I've suggested that in the event that we don't have by the end of the calendar year a signed waiver by each member, that we then assess a penalty or an assessment, and I proposed $250 a year, and that money would go to pay for an umbrella policy, which would add to our insurance coverage and also go to fund the deductible on our existing insurance, so that those of us who sign waivers are not responsible for the cost of the additional liability. Now, I have not priced out an umbrella policy. My recommendation in here is to have a $5 million umbrella policy. They're typically not terribly expensive, but I think if I'm calculating, right now we have, if my calculations are right, somewhere between half and two-thirds of the members have signed waivers. If we continue on that, and I think part of the non-signature is people that either are unaware or are not paying that much attention. We have a lot of members that live in foreign countries and other places that don't visit the ranch that often, so we understand it's going to take a little while. But my recommendation is we assess $250 for those who elect not to sign the waiver. If you pay the $250, then it's as if you signed the waiver, so you're no longer delinquent, you're not behind, you're not in breach. If you do not pay, because I don't want to have to say you don't want to sign the waiver, but you also don't want to pay, then at that point in time, every year that the payment is not made, then it would increase, I've suggested, by 50%. Some people have suggested that it should double. At some point, you either have to sign the waiver or pay the cost of the additional coverage. Now, with that, I want you to understand, as we're discussing this, I haven't priced out the insurance. I haven't personally made calls to people that have not signed waivers that I believe are just ignorant of the fact that it's out there or needs to be taken care of or not email savvy, et cetera. So these numbers would have to be adjusted in the final version so that we have real numbers. But if you don't pay the first year, it's $250. The second year, it would go to whatever 50% more is. The reason for that is it puts us as the ranch in pretty much the same position as if everybody signed the waiver by having the additional insurance coverage. Now, I caution you a little bit, because if you have higher insurance coverage and you get sued, if we have a $10 million coverage on insurance and somebody sues, guess what they sue for? $10 million. If you have $1 million coverage, what do they sue for? $1 million. So I think that $5 million in an umbrella policy is a good compromise, but I'm one person. I'm one out of, 300 plus lot owners, and I feel strongly that we need to have something in place. And so again, it would be a suspension of rights for the balance of the year that something is not signed, but then we start assessing a financial cost that would go towards and remain in a separate account to go towards additional insurance coverage at the discretion of the board. Yeah.
So on the escalation part, when you move to the monetary thing, does the monetary part give you back your rights that were taken away, or is that in addition to?
My feeling, this is just me, my feeling is if you don't sign the waiver but you write a check, you've paid for the additional coverage, so you're back in good standing. That's my feeling. Now, if you don't sign the waiver and you don't pay the check, eventually that's going to turn into we're going to foreclose on your lot, just like we do on unpaid assessments.
All right. I'm thinking about the same question with him. I want to
I agree with that one. I can go with either signing the waiver or paying a fine. Because that does away with the duress. You're not forcing us to sign a legal document.
You have the option. It's just like when you rent a car. You go in to rent a car and you say, I want the additional insurance coverage. I'm going to carry it or I'm going to take the liability. In this case, it's either you waive the liability or you pay for it.
Okay, so if you're good with that, I'm good with that. I assume you're good with that. But can you modify that rule to be either sign the waiver or pay the fine?
Well, yes, it would be included in assuming people go along with me. And I just discussed with the board members today in detail the first time. So I don't know that I have anybody supporting that. But in my opinion, yes, it would be part of the – we're going to have to modify the rules to provide for the penalty. And it should clearly say – it should say you either sign or pay.
Well, I think the loss of voting rights and stuff should be removed from that whole program because of Section 8.4 of the Protection Covenant.
Tell me what 8.4 says.
Section 8.4 is basically titled How You Lose Your Voting Rights and or Privileges. And it only says don't pay your assessments. That's how you lose it. It doesn't say including but not limited to.
Yeah, but generally a fee is the same thing as an assessment.
It's correct. A fee is the same thing as that. So if you don't pay that, that's how you lose them. What you're saying here is if you don't sign this, you lose them. Well, Section 8.4 don't account for that.
Yeah, but if you pay the 250 fee, then you're now...
You can either sign or pay or lose your rights. Your choice.
But if you pay the fee, then your rights are restored per that document as well. So I don't know that it changed, but I think we'd have to clarify all of it.
You'd have to essentially remove that language itself.
Or modify that language to include...
So now the fine becomes the assessment. Section 8.4 accounts for that. If you don't pay your assessment or you refuse to pay...
Fine's already... And I'd have to double check, but generally in every CCNR I've ever seen, and Barry can correct me if I'm wrong, fine and assessment are generally calculated the same thing.
And let me clarify one thing. With the membership mix we have right now, the hope or prayer of changing the CCNRs and bylaws never going to happen. I'll just tell you that right now.
But again, fine and assessment, same thing. Once you pay bring your assessments to good standing, your rights come back. Your rights aren't gone forever. So if you're fine, so basically what he's saying, once you pay your fine, you're now in good standing and it comes back. Next year, there's going to be a new fine assessed if you didn't sign your waiver, so you didn't have the same option. So I don't understand. What are you wanting to have modified in the...
In the beginning, he said, if you don't sign in the beginning, you lose all your rights. And then the second
for that
year,
remainder of that calendar.
So I'm just trying to lay out the chronology. We didn't... My proposal didn't assess a fine immediately. You could choose to say, rather than signing the waiver on March 1st, here's my check. You're in good standing. There is no... The suspension of rights only assumes that you don't do one or the other.
And he was going to give them a year, actually, to sign the waiver, just giving them that time before the fine.
Yes, but in that time, you lose your rights. That's the way I understood it.
No, you don't, if
you don't sign by March, you lose your rights till the end of the year. And then the second year, you...
That's the clarification.
We can clarify that. I'm not suggesting... There's no... If you either sign or pay, then you wouldn't lose your rights. If you don't do either, then you're going to lose your rights.
But now, okay, so on that same note, so if you sign and pay and you want to rent a cabin, let's say you pay, right? So you don't want to sign it, so you pay. But since the waiver is built into the electronic system of the cabin, you can't get a cabin unless you sign it.
I'm glad you brought that up. Absolutely. Let me clarify. Nobody's going to use the cabin without signing a waiver. There's no paying to make that happen.
But can we propose putting that cabin waiver back to the original cabin waiver?
To a cabin waiver.
Just specific cabin waiver, cabin RV waiver. Instead of this general take away all of our rights waiver.
I wouldn't be in favor of that. You can propose it and we can discuss it, but The waiver we have right now, we worked on in concert with lots of people and had lots of input. And I think, again, this is me. You sign, without signing a waiver, you're not going to use a cabin, period. Even if you pay, that's where the main focus of our liability exists is cabin use.
Well, the current waiver very lightly touches on cabin. And if you think about it, everything associated with cabins is gross negligence. So they don't even apply.
Yeah, because we all know it exists and we all rent it anyway.
Well, I would again disagree with you. But that's okay. We're here to discuss. So with the clarification, I think absolutely a very, very strong, again, I've heard from people that the waiver we have is not ironclad enough related to cabins, and so that will be reviewed on an ongoing basis because the waiver we have may increase more, may have more content related to cabin use, because I honestly think that's our number one potential liability there. Another thing that's been mentioned, just so I'll throw that out there, a lot of people have said, well, we already have a waiver in the CCNRs, and that's true. The problem is the waiver in the CCNRs is only binding on the lot owner, not family members, friends, and otherwise, or guests or otherwise. They can say, it says that no guest or no member will allow anybody to sue the association based on anything that happens on the ranch. The problem is my lot is owned by an LLC. So my LLC cannot sue the association based on if I fall down the stairs, the bad rickety stairs in the cabin. I can say I individually that does not bind me. So we have to have, in my opinion, we have to have a separate waiver over and above what is set out in the CCNRs to give us the protection and coverage we need. There's also out there a statute that gives us some protection for guests that come on the ranch for recreational purposes. Again, it's helpful, but I am firmly of the opinion that we need to have a very strong and a very clear general waiver for members to sign and for participation in any of the activities on the ranch. Cabins specifically, we have to have a waiver. So I don't want to occupy the entire time. Do we have any other questions or comments?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
All right.
This is Michael Jordison, 67. So Barry, it's your opinion that the new HOA laws that were just passed, talking about fees, this falls under an assessment, not a fee?
Well,
Fines. Fines are different than fees.
There was no change to the penalty section of the statute. The changes that were made were for transfer fees, reinvestment fees, and the disclosure HOA has to make related to costs of maintenance and contracts they hold. I actually worked with Neil Walter, the congressman that passed that, and he had me review and redraft a portion of what was changed. So, but this, what we're talking about here with having a waiver and a related penalty, which is what it's called in the statute, no changes would affect what I'm talking about.
Part of that was a list of fees. The board had to list out and vote on and publish a list of fees. Was that not part of that?
Those are typically related to maintenance and those kind of things. This is a separate penalty related to non-compliance with the rules. So I don't see that they cross over.
Okay. Thank you. I just seeking clarification. Thanks.
No problem. Yes.
Santa Morarity, lot 26. So is the price of the insurance somehow affected by whether we have this waiver or not?
It is not currently, but it will be, I think. As I see things changing, then it's like in the old days, if you had a trampoline and you don't have kids sign waiver or a swimming pool, I think it's coming. But as of right now, no. The fact that we don't have a written separate waiver from what's in the CCNRs has not to date affected our insurance premium cost. Is that right, Danielle?
Right. So, as a compromise, is it possible to have a waiver for guests and other people other than members?
Yes. So we have, that's why the cabin waiver is critical, because that's where we gather in and gather signatures from guests that are occupying the cabins. Guests that simply drive on the ranch, we're going to post signs, but we have no way to track or to, can't close the gate and have them sign a waiver as they come through the door. So this is, we've gone through this for, I would say, almost a year trying to figure out the best way to make that happen. And I think we've checked off as many boxes as we can. It's not perfect, but it's the best we can come up with.
So,
go ahead.
Brian Kessel, Lot 130. I made a proposal about the waiver that is not to be, unconditional, that it would be a limited waiver, because the owners here have two roles. They're also participants in activities as well as owners. And it seems like the current waiver only protects them in their ownership role and not in their membership role. And, part of the dues we pay go to buy that insurance policy, but then we sign away any right to it through the waiver. So we're paying for it, but we have to sign not to use it. I don't know why the waiver couldn't be amended to change that only, claims that where the ranch has been found to be, liable under covered by insurance would be the only valid claims that could be made. If someone got, run over by a road grader, because the parking brake wasn't set or it failed or something, and that person had children or a wife, why wouldn't we want them to be able to seek some, form of compensation for that loss? What we're saying is to protect us. The main goal is to absolutely protect us, even if we cause someone that's injured by the ranch's negligence, that they would have to bear that on their own so that we would be immune. I don't know why it couldn't be to the benefit of everyone, where it protects us that we'll never see anything above what our insurance policy is, or at least limit claims to a certain amount, and you cover the members in that type of situation where we're asking them to take on full responsibility. I don't think that's morally right. I mean, if you cause or contribute to someone's harm and you say, you had to sign this, so you have no, recourse. I don't think that.
Well, and that's your submission was discussed. The part of the problem, just briefly, the only way that an individual member or not gets to the insurance policy is by suing the ranch. And so if we were to say that all claims are limited to whatever the insurance pays, guess what the insurance is going to pay? Zero. You can't legally make that distinction. Now, I understand where you're coming from, saying, hey, if we've got the road grader on a blind curve parked across the road and we left it there for 2 months waiting for somebody to crash into it, I understand the concern there. But our obligation as board members is to protect the ranch against losing assets. And so members have to take responsibility for being here and recognizing this is a potentially dangerous place. And I don't know how to split the difference without invalidating everything we've done. The waiver cases that exist in Utah say unless it's absolute, unless it's clear and unequivocal, then the waiver will not be sustained at all. So we're doing the best we can, in my opinion, to cover the potential liability of the ranch. But if we soften it, then we might as well throw it in the garbage and not have one at all. And maybe that's what this board or the next board or the board after that will elect to do. I'm not prepared to do that. I think we need to have a waiver, and I think we need to limit the liability of the company. I think that's my legal obligation to do. But
well, Barry, from past waiver discussions too, if there is actual gross negligence
is not covered by any of this.
They still have the capability to. They're not wavering gross negligence scenario.
We're taking the entire risk off of us as owners and putting it on us as members.
Now, well, the association could choose as an association. We could say, hey, we should have done this. We could pay $5,000. Or, I mean, we're obviously not going to be able to give them $1 million. But to his point, in order to get the insurance to pay out, the insurance is only going to pay out.
You know, minimum that they absolutely have to, which if we have a waiver that says, we'll only take what the insurance pays out, then the insurance is going to pay out zero.
And two other brief points. One is that I think it would probably be worthwhile to draft a separate waiver for the cabins. If that's the main source of liability, to not try to make everything so ironclad. If that's where the risk is, have a specific cabin waiver that's more restrictive. I don't see a problem with that.
That is an option that we can certainly discuss. It's been discussed in the past, but it's something we can look at. I'm not saying that some of the other things I just don't think will work, but that's something we can at least evaluate. And again, I'm not trying to be mean to anybody. And granted, I'm not here nearly as often as people that live here and that are here all the time. But looking at it from my perspective, this is what we need to do to make it work. So
my one addition I would make to that is the waiver did start out as the cabin waiver. So a lot of the things that were on previously, and maybe we need to force or add to it a little bit more, but it started out as the cabin waiver, added a few things on for the rest of the ranch. And from a board perspective, it's easier just to collect one waiver. And the nice thing right now is we can say, hey, if you rented the cabin, you've signed it there, that can count as your annual waiver. We don't have to keep on chasing one, you know, that's different for the members. So from a management standpoint, it's easier. Back like Barry says, I don't know that it's totally off, but that was some of the discussion we had.
Maybe selfish, but we're trying to make this manageable from us and the future boards in the future to be able to say, do we have a waiver? Oh, sorry, Dan, go ahead.
I would disagree with that. The rule says a fully signed waiver. If you look at the waivers required when renting a cabin, it's not a fully signed waiver. Now, perhaps it could be changed into a fully signed waiver. But I have, I've looked at the statistics of who signed the annual waiver that was sent out with the dues assessment, and who has signed waivers making cabin reservations. And the administrative burden there to figure out the correlation is high, and it turns out that an insignificant number of people who sign cabin reservation waivers did not sign the general waiver. So there's, I think, strong reasons not to try and compare the cabin waivers, which are not fully signed per the rule, and count that as qualifying for the general waiver, at the very least because of the administrative burden.
Understood. So just to kind of, we talked about previously, we weren't going to vote on anything today, just to make sure everybody's clear. We're going to give it a week or two to get any other additional proposals that everybody wanted to have available. And then we're going to send out a notice to all the members, because there's a fairly small group that's here right now today. We want to make sure everybody has a chance to put in input. So we're going to have more input in the next meeting and kind of proceed forward with that. So
what I would suggest is I send out, you each have my research. Anybody online that wants it, I can just let me know it. You can either take what I've got and cross through it and say, this is crap, this is crap, this is crap, and send it back and we'll figure it out. Or if you want to draft up or write up a competing or an alternate proposal, then that we want that submitted well in advance of the next meeting, just so we're prepared and can have a discussion. Because I don't think, in my experience, it's helpful to have alternatives to actually vote on rather than a discussion and a mess that we verbally. I mean, making modifications is one thing, but trying to enunciate a new rule from scratch in the meeting's a little difficult. So anything you can submit in writing before then is going to be helpful, and then we'll have an open discussion. Invite anybody that has an opinion to make sure they're at the next meeting to have a discussion on this, and then we'll take that input as a board, and I'm hoping to have a vote on what the final rule will look like. Does that make sense? Yes.
I had a second point that I didn't.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
I don't mind that the make the additional payment to pay for carbon insurance. My main objective was I had to sign away my participant rights to keep insurance rights. That is, I think, a manageable, a common sense solution, as long as that amount doesn't become punitive, as long as it remains an alternative. Like you can pay, and it should be based upon the actual costs of the coverage.
Yeah.
And of course, if the coverage goes up, that would go up.
The attempt was, just from my perspective in the draft that I put together, I didn't want it to be punitive, but it needs to be to make it a serious decision. But you're right, it needs to be tied in some way to reality. It's not there. Of we're going to punish you is there basically to put us back in the position as if you had signed the waiver. So that was my attempt. I don't know whether I did a great job or a terrible job. Everybody's going to have a different opinion, but I think that's what we need to discuss. And you're right. If the cost of insurance goes up, then it needs to be adjusted accordingly. Again, we don't want to burden. If I'm willing to sign a waiver, I shouldn't be burdened with the cost of the additional insurance. That's my thought. Jeff?
In the budget to be able to cover it if 100% sign the waiver.
Yeah, well, the existing, my opinion is, with the existing coverage we have, if everybody signed the waiver, we're covered. If we have people not signing the waiver, then we start having this. I think to cover ourselves, we need to have the additional insurance, and we need to have those that don't sign the waiver that cause the additional cost. Participate in the additional cost. Jeff?
So my question is, so if the cost is associated with increase in insurance policy, which we all agree biggest liability is cabins, but yet you still can't use the cabins because you're not signing it, you're actually paying for something that you can't use again. So just like we're doing right now, like to Brian's point, we're paying for insurance right now that we have to sign away a right to use. So now we're going to get a bill to pay for high insurance, but we still can't use the cabins.
If you pay, you can use.
Not the cabins. The cabins we were trying to keep off that one.
Absolutely, unequivocally, you will.
That was one of his examples.
Yeah, I. This is just me again. I'm one of seven here and one of 300 plus. Because of where we've been and the situation with the cabins, potential. Thank goodness, knock on wood, we haven't. I wouldn't. That's an activity. That's an elective activity that people want to enjoy, and they have to acknowledge that there's risk there, and that with the use of the cabins. I don't see any way around that.
Well, I guess I would have to disagree with Brian then, because again, if it's associated with the cost of said insurance policy and it goes up with said insurance policy, but yet you still can't use our biggest liability, you're just paying, that's just money grabbing that you're just paying.
And I understand, it comes back to, we have lots of members that say, I never use the cabins, I should have my assessment reduced. I never go out there, I certainly shouldn't have to pay for this road or this water system. We're going to cover the best we can that covers as many people as possible. I don't think, again, just me, I don't think we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of, well, you're paying for the insurance, but you do or don't use the cabins. It's got to be a simple rule that we can enforce across the board.
That you do or don't, that you can't.
Well,
right. So you're paying so that you don't have to sign the waiver, but you cannot use the cabin.
That is a good summary of my proposal.
Sign the waiver anyway.
And that could be a good summary of a counter proposal that you guys helped type up, and we're
open. That's there.
If I'm understanding this correctly, cabins are the biggest liability. That you cannot rent a cabin without signing the waiver. I almost rented a cabin to come out this time, and I didn't. So why is it so difficult to make that specific and not, like, if you have a separate waiver, if people don't sign it, they can't rent the cabin. I don't know how that's so much more management.
Well, so currently today, that's what's in place. You have to sign a waiver in order to actually rent it on the online reservation fee. So that's already currently in.
People saying, well, I never use cabins, so I don't have to sign a waiver, blah, 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 blah.
No, what Jeff and Tina are saying, yeah, but we're just talking about if there's a blanket waiver for both scenarios, right? So we're annually asking members to sign it, whether they use the cabin or not, but if they don't sign it, then we're saying you can't rent the cabin until you sign that waiver. So,
saying before that, you know, trying to make it easier for management not to have one that's more strict than another. As far as the whole.
That could be an option to separate it out. I'm just saying so far that it's just an easy way to have one waiver that we're managing and changing, but that might be a change. Yep.
So let's, without beating this horse to death, because we're going to have more discussion. If you have input, feel free to submit it to the board.
Do you have a deadline for that, do you think?
Honestly, I think we need whatever submissions we're going to have in the next 2 weeks. So 2 weeks from today, does that work? Is that going to break anybody's schedule? And, well, I think that's a reasonable deadline. We need to have enough time to get those in and then formulate kind of how we're gonna proceed. Does that, any objections to doing it that way? Any other concerns? We're not gonna get to where everybody's agreeing and holding hands on this issue. We're gonna do the best we can. I don't want to have anybody feel like I'm picking on them or being mean. I'm doing what I think is best. I'm one vote. You have plenty of other people that you can talk to. That may be swayed, but I think this is an issue that we need to put to bed, because quite honestly, I don't want to talk about it again until next year when we start the cycle over again. We've spent an enormous amount of time and energy and effort on this, and not that that's an excuse or anything. It's a very serious issue, but it's time to decide what the rule is and move on and be done with it, at least at this point. So. That's all I have, unless you have any questions.
I have a tangent just because Michael Dorson brought up the new HOA laws, and you were involved in that, so I don't have to go read a whole bunch of stuff. What is the new rule surrounding transfer fees for laws? Because that does affect us.
So you're limited in the amount of the transfer fee that you can you can assess to a half a percent of the value or the cost of the transfer. It doesn't affect us unless we have or increase our transfer fees. But bottom line is you can't, the idea, just so everybody knows, these huge HOA management companies were finding ways to make money on transfers and on reinvestment fees. Transfer fees were actually outlawed for about 10 years. And now they've allowed them back, but they're limited. But the point is I don't think they affect anything we've been doing. But it's to try to take some of these huge management companies from, you know, they're charging. I have one that I did a mediation for. They charge $3,500 for somebody to sell their property to somebody else on a transfer fee. And it's, they say, well, we got to make copies of the documents. Well, that's BS. It might take you $50 to regenerate the bylaws and HOA stuff. It's just a way to avoid some of these larger management companies screwing people. So that's really what it's aimed at.
But speaking of that one, though, too, I don't know that we've properly got our stuff recorded to do the transfer fees, do we?
So I'd have to look back. We originally had them, and then they were outlawed for a while, and now they're being permitted again. I'd have to look at that.
Daniel, you started the draft one up to get recorded, and I don't think it actually ever got recorded.
There has to be a separate acknowledgement of what they are and how they're calculated.
And a recorded notice on the...
Both the reinvestment and transfer.
Yes. Uh-huh. So if we decide if we determine that's necessary or helpful for the association, then we need to follow the rules, and I'm happy to help with that.
We are currently charging $100 for transfer.
And I would assume the typical transfer of a Deer Springs unit is probably $50,000. Would that be a fair average lot price?
Yeah.
You're well under any limits. But
I just don't think we've got anything technically recorded.
We want to get that recorded. The other problem is nobody finds out about the transfer fee until they're at closing, and they say, okay, do I want to blow up the deal and lose my financing for my house over $3,500? And they usually cave and say, you know what, I'll pay it. And anyway, it's a way to take advantage. We don't do that, but others do. Okay, sorry, that's it.
Any other comments? All right, Mike, you're up.
Okay, financially, things are still looking excellent. The numbers, it's still early in the year, so the numbers are almost identical to what they were last month. We've got like $200 more in the bank than we did last month because, it's still early. We have $170,808 in checking. We have two savings accounts. The first one has $15,718. Second one has $6,185. We have an annual meeting CD, which is money set aside specifically for annual meetings. That's the money that is raised from the auction at the annual meetings. The annual meeting CD has $8,291 in it. And we don't know what we're going to do with that money yet, but at some point we will.
Tina said if I took half of it to Vegas tonight, then
we could double it. And we have 10 individual CDs, which are money that the ranch has made over the years in the past and has set aside into interest-making CDs. So that money is continuing to grow on an ongoing basis. The 10 individual CDs added together are $104,275. When you add all those numbers together, the ranch currently has $305,280.04.
Coincidentally, there are 305 lots.
Cash out now.
So we're talking about a rebate.
Actually, there are 309 because 10 lots have been subdivided into 5 acres.
They're still, those are half lots, though. There are only 305 plotted.
And 305, I can remember, yeah.
You're both correct. They're half lots, but we do need to recognize that they exist where we haven't in the past.
Okay. 5 acre lots. Or 10 acre lots.
10 acre lots.
Not aware of that. No.
Okay, so the good news is we've got lots of money in the bank, but the bad news is we will be spending at least half of it this year on normal ranch expenses. So the biggest issue in my mind in terms of we're talking about financing is the fact that we still have a large number of owners who have not paid their annual dues. And that includes, well, last month the number was about 30. Where are we at this month, Danielle?
25.
So we have about 25 owners who have not paid dues, and some of them are delinquent for a couple of years. So we're in the process of going after those folks to pay their dues, the interest that they're also obligated to pay. And the way it works is if folks are not able to pay their dues or not willing to pay their dues, then ultimately it will end up in a foreclosure on the property, which obviously nobody wants that. So we would much rather just have them pay the dues that they're obligated to pay like all the rest of us and move on. But in my opinion, that's really the biggest financial issue that we have at this point. Is there anything that you would like to add or anything that we should be doing that you're not already doing in terms of following up with those folks?
Nope. I'll be sending out a letter with their updated balance that they owe by the end of June. And if not, it'll go to collections. And then, well, for the ones that are 2 years past due.
What's the interest rate?
18%.
And sell those lots or absorb them into common ground?
I can tell you from the past, the number that have been foreclosed on that came back to the ranch was like 40 years. But the answer to your question is turn around and sell them, because we don't want to have another non-assessment paying. This is my opinion. Sorry, I need to clarify. They've already been sold once, and so we would if we were to foreclose, gain ownership, we'd immediately put it back on the market and sell it. Now, with that being said, the way the foreclosure process works is our opening bid is only what's owed on the assessment. So somebody's going to come in and say, hey, I'm willing to bid, because by the time they're 2 years in arrears, they might owe $2,000. Nobody's going to let a Deer Springs lot go at an auction for $2,000. There will be other people there to bid, as typically happens. So the chances of the association getting a lot back is as close to zero as you can get.
How does it work if there's a note against it?
It's the assessment is subject to whatever loans are out there. So if you buy it based on the assessment, you still could potentially owe the amount payable on the note you're financing.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Have to do that too, right? So if you bid the
if the ranch buys it, then they have to. They're just like anybody else.
Right. They got to fulfill the note.
The only advantage to the ranch is they get to make the first bid, but the first bid is always just what's owed. So
I think it should go for market value.
Depends on whether you're losing it or buying it. Your opinion changes depending on what.
From the ranch perspective, too, because the ranch would get the money, so it should go for market value.
Well, when they resell it, they'd sell it for market value.
Yeah.
The auction.
No, the auction is whatever the bid is.
The auction is to get it, and then once Deer Springs owns it, they sell it at market value.
True. Correct.
Okay, moving on. Any questions about the P&L that Danielle sent out about the finances? Okay, no questions. Next, on the cabins, upper cabins are getting ready to open at the end of this week. And Cody, or is it next week?
Next week. They actually open on the 15th.
So Cody will, today's the 10th, so it's this coming week. Yeah. So Cody will talk more about cabins in a minute or two. The main thing I wanted to mention is the fact that we will be rebuilding the main deck on the garden cabin. So on the other side. Well, when I say the main deck and the upper deck on the other side, I'm saying we're not rebuilding that one right there. So, yeah, we're rebuilding the decks on the other side. there was a discussion about possibly fixing it. As opposed to rebuilding it, and the decision was made that it has deteriorated to the point where fixing it is no longer an option. So it will be totally rebuilt. And then every year we have things in the cabins that are broken that need to be fixed or replaced, and so this year will be no different than any other year. As we find things that need to be fixed or repaired or replaced, that will be done. The other big project that I wanted to talk about is the playground equipment that Cade purchased. Well, actually, the ranch purchased it. Cade is the correct. So you facilitated it, but the ranch paid for it, or did you pay for it?
I paid for it with some contributions from other members, but yeah.
Well, I stand corrected. So you and other members purchased. Paid the money to buy the playground equipment. The total cost was like $2,500, right?
Yep.
So thank you, Cade, and everybody else who did that. And now yeah,
thanks for making a problem for Larry.
And now the challenge is to get it put together. So we started that project last month after the board meeting to haul everything over to the new area that Larry leveled it all out, got it ready to go down by the volleyball court. I have a playground set up on my lot here for the grandkids, and it was all just, you know, bolted together, set it up, you know, put a couple of things down into the ground, but it was not a huge project. This is a huge project. The posts that all the equipment attaches to get buried 4 feet into the ground. So you're not going to be standing there with a shovel digging a 4 foot hole and several of them in the perfect place to try to put this stuff all together. The playground equipment that we're talking about was actually purchased from the city of St. George because it was in a city park and the city parks department in St. George was getting rid of their old playground equipment for whatever reason. So that's where it came from. So this is substantial playground equipment that will be very nice once it's finally installed and usable. But we need to get from here to there and it's going to be a big project. So having said all of that, this guy right here has volunteered to dig some holes for us, but we need to figure out exactly where the holes go.
There was a pretty good little group of people that were here last month to try to do something, and we rapidly realized that it was all we could do to just carry things into somewhere close to position and start deciphering what goes where. We got all that done, and then Tina did a great job to identify from the photography and from holes on the ground, which holes are which. So we're at the stage now where I'm ready to drill holes, but my drill hole tractor machine was up in Slide Canyon and the weather kind of got us this last week where I didn't want to take 3 days to rescue a tractor. And so sometime in the next week, we'll get holes drilled and in the next 2 weeks, get poles in the ground. And so by the next meeting, maybe we can have another volunteer effort to assemble and bolt.
Well, we may want to bring it up for Memorial Day, too, as a possible 20 holes.
20 holes. Wow.
And then the slide is its own holes, so
it's 20 holes. Okay. So, needless to say, it's a big project, and Cade can I'm not going to be here next month after the board meeting to participate, but either Memorial Day or after the,
both, maybe even two. I'll put it out there and see how many people we can get for either one of them.
Yeah, I think it would be a great volunteer project to just announce it in advance, say these are the dates it's going to happen, and have as many people show up as possible. I think that would be a good way to approach it. Okay, that's all I had. Any questions about anything, cabins, finances, anything?
The only question I had about the playground equipment was, Cade, where are the bolts?
I brought
Cody
bolts.
Has them. Cody has them.
Okay.
Cody.
I don't know where they are.
I'm like a dog with a bone, Cade.
Dog let it go. Yeah.
All right, I'm done. Moving on.
All right, property manager, Cody, you're up.
Real quick, I guess, kind of on that. So on the garden cabin, I did, when I turned the water on there, the cabin side of the stop and waste was broken. So I dug that out and redid the water line all the way up, took out some of the old polybutylene pipe that was in there as well, and just replaced it all with packs.
That was a pretty good project, right? Don't minimize that. It was
snowing, and the cabin was rented that next day, so I actually did it overnight, dug it out, and got it put back together. So it worked out well, though. So, and yeah, that's a done deal. I know we did get some extra water heaters. This one won't stay lit, and I did try. I can't find a new coupler for a thermal coupler, so I tried to just sand it down. It's like every day or two I go in there.
Yeah, I've gotten multiple complaints on it.
I mean, maybe we can discuss on where we put those three tankless ones we have, because maybe the two garden cabin and this. I mean, we can decide where they go, but this one maybe needs to.
Well, this one's become a priority based upon the number of complaints I've gotten.
So maybe we'll look at just getting that, at least put one of them in here just to have that.
Okay.
Well, 1 and 6 worked for great, or 10 worked great last night, so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's working.
I'll work with Brent on getting, I'll get this one replaced in here then, at least for now. So the garden cabin's going to, we actually have that closed from the 13th through the 20th for the deck repair as well, so that's blocked out from being rented for those days. I guess the final thing I had, this is really kind of for you guys, is whether there should be a reservation cancellation charge for the RV sites. So we had someone rent an RV site and then cancel. There's not currently anything there, and it's pretty minimal, but it was around $4 is what it cost for just the ranch, I guess, to make the
reservation.
Have it canceled. So something to consider on.
So I think we discussed that, and everybody was okay with the cancellation, but what I wasn't clear is if we're charging a reservation fee as well, or are we just talking a $10 cancellation fee if the cancellation occurs?
The cabin committee decided on that rate. It was, we figured the reservation fee would be absorbed with the nightly rate for it, minimal.
Right.
But I didn't even think about a cancellation fee when we were discussing it.
Yeah, so I think the board was kind of okay with a $10 cancellation fee, but that would be collected out of whatever they paid for the lot, not necessarily a reservation fee up front. But that wasn't totally clear when you responded, Mike, if you wanted a $10 reservation.
Solution. No, I think just if you cancel it, you pay $10 out of
just the,
they pay up front, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would say it's $10. We keep $10 and refund the
remaining amount.
Yeah, that's basically our cost for doing all the work and having it be off the market for somebody else that might have rented it otherwise.
That goes along with the normal rate of if they cancel less than 30 days, they forfeit 10. If it's under 30 days.
But this is just the RV sites, not the cabins.
But so is it following the same timeline if they cancel those?
I would say it follows the same timeline. Because if it's more than 30 days, we don't allow them to cancel.
Like if it's under, they forfeit, whatever it is.
That's how it is.
What is the fees for? Because doesn't Fire, like, aren't the fees?
Every single time somebody makes a reservation on Firefly, it costs us $4. So we pay a monthly fee for Firefly, and then we pay for every single reservation per transaction. So every reservation, even though it's the site, it's going to cost us $4. So if we give them all their money back, we lost $4 on the deal.
Okay. Can I suggest a $5 fee for just the RV pads? Because right now, we're not booked up. There's not a waiting list for the RV pads. So $10 to me kind of sounds high.
So $5, and basically it just covers the cost?
Until they're so booked.
Well, there's cost of time for the bookkeeper and Andrea and whatever
to it than that. I don't know if we need to have a motion, but I would move that we charge a $10 cancellation fee and move on.
Yeah.
If you can't afford the extra $5, then stay home.
I second that.
All in favor?
That's a $10 cancellation fee.
Yeah.
Isn't it a reservation fee $25?
There is no reservation fee.
No reservation fee.
For the.
This is the only money we get if somebody makes a reservation and backs out.
On the
RV
side. On the, so just just so everybody's on the same page. On the cabins, there's a $25 reservation fee. If they cancel before 30 days, they get all of their money back except for the $25. So $25 is non-refundable irregardless. On the cabin site, there's no reservation fee.
The RV site.
Sorry, yeah, the RV site. There's no reservation fee, but there's also no cancellation fee currently. So the proposal right now is that we don't charge any reservation fee. We allow them to reserve it. But if they do end up canceling, we're going to take $10 off. But Danielle's brought up the point, what do we do if it's less than 30-day notice? Do we just keep the reservation like we do with everything else, or do we – so cancellation
– money either way, right? 30 days or not 30 days, it still costs you money through Firefly, correct?
Correct.
So I would say it doesn't matter when they cancel.
Well, but –
But if they're within 30 days, then it keeps us from having somebody else use it. It keeps it messes things up. That's why we have a see. If you cancel a cabin within 30 days, you pay whatever you're going to pay for as if you used it, right?
Yeah. So that's what we're proposing with. So is that what we want to do with the?
I do with the same. That way we don't have two different rules. If it's within 30 days, they pay as if they
pay
up.
$10. Yeah, and or okay, gotcha.
If it's longer than 30 days, we keep $10 and call it good.
Okay, everybody understand that proposal?
So I just want to be clear. So what you're proposing, Barry, is if it's before the 30 days, they only pay $10. If it's within 30 days, then they forfeit all of the money that they paid.
Right.
That's the proposal.
That's my proposal.
That's the rule right now for cabins.
Correct. Right.
I think it's smart to just keep the same policy. Cabins, RV sites.
I agree.
The only difference is a $10.
There's
no reason to charge them $25 to cancel it up there. So. Okay.
I'm not smart enough to keep my lies correct straight, so I have to keep one lie at a time. So.
Okay, it sounds like everybody passed that. Do we all want to vote on it?
No, we had a vote.
Okay. All in favor?
All in favor. Aye.
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 Okay.
Any opposed?
All right.
Did we lose these guys?
You guys still hear us on the Zoom?
Yes, I do.
Hey, thanks, Michael.
Anything else, Cody?
Just kind of touch up on the upper cabins are being put together. All the water's on and charged up there. Going through a few of them, like cabin four, the ceiling's actually kind of, some of that paneling is falling down. It's fairly minor, but just some little touch-up things. I was going to also just touch on that the rats or rodent problem up there is quite a bit better this year than previously, sounds like. So pretty good. I don't know. I'm feeling good about not cleaning up a ton of rat crap. So it's been decent.
But they all moved down here to the store, right?
This one's bad. That's all I've got, though.
Okay.
All right, Dirk, gear up.
You still with us, Dirk?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, just a couple of updates on water. And maybe I can ask Larry to chime in. On the out of the four culinary water connections that we had committed to put in the lower canyon system, three of them are now done, right, Larry?
No, just two.
Two of them are complete. Gary Clark and Marco Prado are 100% complete.
The third, we are about 90% sure we have a good solution and we can resolve it fairly quickly. And the fourth one will take a little more work, but we're I'd say a 25% solution there.
So on the two remaining, one of them, we're just basically trying to test the water pressure and see.
That's actually what we're going to do that on both of those. We have proven, Brent has proven that Mark Giacinto
Giancarlo, however you say his name, that we have 30 PSI at his hydrant location. So if we relocate the meter to that point, we're done. We have not tested the pressure at Rob Johnson's, but feel very strongly that that's going to be the same case there.
Okay.
His will take a little bit more work simply because in making the change, we're going to actually relay his line so that it's not an uphill, downhill airlock problem.
Yeah.
That's partially what kills his pressure is the vacuum of the line. So if we redo that and then move the meter, we'll have a similar solution on both Mark and Rob's system, which should take place during the next month to, it'll be done before
Alaska?
Before I go to Alaska in July.
Okay, sounds good. And Brent was involved in putting in the first of our test stations up by the 40,000-gallon water tank. And the first samples coming out of it are going to be used for information, not for the system certification. And Brent, do you want to comment about how you think that they came physically and how they're going to work in the future?
Okay. Well, we replaced what we did on the 40K tank. There was a hydrant there, and so Larry dug it up very carefully, and we simply removed the hydrant. And the hydrant was there simply to allow air out of the water line. If we had to shut the 40,000-gallon tank down for maintenance, we use the water line as our storage. Our 6,000 gallons can be stored in that water line. And so the only reason that hydrant was there to relieve to let the air out, and when we know the line was full, and the sampling station takes place of what the hydrant did. We learned a little bit about it. We will probably end up raising the other ones. Did you stop by and look at what I did? Okay, that's just a test. I've got a great big huge piece of flagstone I'm going to set there instead of those little ones, and then place rocks all around the back. Okay. So anyway, that one's went in. The next one I would like to do is the one near the electrical building. That one is going to be even a little more touchy on the digging, because we got both the main power line going to the step down transformer, but we also have the triplex going past it that goes back to the cabins. And but there, I'd like to cut into that where the hydrant is there near the electrical building and install that one there. The one after that is going to go here over here behind the carport. And then the final one is going to be the hardest one, and that's going to be over near the Studenpaw vault. And that one we're going to have to hot tap the line to make it work. So what we're going to do, as Dirk said, we're going to do an investigative sample off of the sampling station this time, and then we'll do a test from one of the cabins. And if we come up with I think we're going to have we'll get a good sample from both. But anyway, we're starting to make progress on it.
Thanks, Brent. I appreciate all of your work on all of these things.
Thank you, Dirk.
That's all I have to report.
Okay.
Just for clarification, the one by the electrical building, are we tapping into an existing the hydrant that's near there, or
yes,
are we hot tapping near the building?
No, we're going to do. My plan was is that we'll dig that up.
Is it the hydrant that's by the fire pit?
Yes.
We want to put the test station closer to the electrical building.
No, I want to put it close to the hydrant.
Okay. I thought we talked some about having it close enough to run heat tape.
We did, but now that we have that evacuation pump, we don't
need
to. There's
no need
to.
Okay.
So,
all right. That's in my brain. I was trying to.
I'm just looking at that. We'll be able to tap right into that hydrant line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you still have water there at the fire pit?
Yes.
There'll be a hydrant.
Yeah, we'll
the hydrant will still be there.
This last one, we removed the hydrant, put the test spigot. We could have put them both back, but there's no need to.
Gotcha.
At the fire pit, there is a need to still have a functional hydrant.
Exactly.
And not be sucking water out of Tina's test.
We didn't have all the parts we needed.
Yeah, we probably would have.
Gotcha.
So, okay, that makes sense. And then this one over here is removing a hydrant that's bad.
This one over here is going to take that hydrant out. We're going to tap in there. See, the line right behind the carport runs straight down to this other hydrant.
Right.
So we're going to dig that out. It's almost all dug out already. Then we're going to tap into the line, put the sampling station there. It'll, you know, be out of sight, out of mind. And we'll put that hydrant the good hydrant we took out of the 40,000 and put next to this sampling station over here. And then, because we need the hydrant behind for the corrals.
I was hoping we'd put it over here. And then when you have your big equipment, we can pull out those stumps.
Yeah.
But this is a dead end, right? We can't do it over here.
We can still pull out the stumps.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's the plan.
Okay.
Okay. If that's all Dirk has, okay, I do think now is the time we need to talk about where. Oh, there she is. Okay. Danielle's leaving, and we don't know exactly when. So. Is this like a vampire? You can't be in the sun?
Yeah, she'll burst into flames.
Okay. Anyway, so.
Mine died.
So, basically, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be putting out, and we're announcing it now, but we'll be putting it out. Her job will be available, and we'll be encouraging resumes from the members and or anybody the members know that they think might be qualified. And so
we wanted to get resumes by the 24th, though, I think, is where we decided.
Yes.
So we'll probably need to send an actual email out to people that aren't here. But anybody here, if you want to give us a resume by the 24th, this is what we're looking to, if you got interest.
Who's going to send that notice and request out? Because I think that was before Barry got to our meeting. Were we there?
I wasn't.
Well, Danielle's got the – we can –
I'll send out an email with the
job description,
expectations, the requirements, description.
And tell them that they need a resume by the 24th, 2 weeks from today.
So anyway, Danielle, you know.
She won't be leaving for a few months, but it gives us time for her to work with whoever we take the position.
Train
they can get trained for a couple of different meetings and through the annual meeting.
Yeah, we want somebody on board before the annual meeting so they can go through the vote counting process and all that fun stuff, which is a big, well, not a big, but a substantial part of the job.
Well, can I ask how much of your job requires in-town stuff? Huh?
Much.
Much?
All the bank and post office.
I will be asking the board for their input on requirements. I have personally, just through this job, would require, for my requirements, and the board can override, but it would be someone local, preferably non-member, but we'll be opening it up to both.
Just make your job description sound really complicated.
Right. Never going to be able.
I have to do my nails.
We're never going to be able to replace her.
So, okay.
They don't have to live at my house. That's a requirement.
They can't live at your house. That's a requirement, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
I was going to say, don't have to or can't.
Yeah, I should clarify that better.
Make sure you mention what.
Not just live at my house. Take over every room of my house.
Well, just make sure Danielle mentions what a PETA it is that deal with the board. Okay, Cade, you're up.
So no real updates on the roads other than this rain's kind of, I noticed some of our culverts we just put in, we're getting nice little divots now. We're going to have to go through and clear out. I don't know if you have time to go meet with Dan at some point to go look at that road or.
I do, and we've talked a little bit, but I don't have time today. The minute we're done with this meeting, I've got to head for town and pick up five people and to Las Vegas to hit an appointment and then pick up somebody at the airport at midnight. So I can be back at noon tomorrow. Next week. Yeah, we'll get together and go.
Well, it's probably more important than the two of you. So if you guys can coordinate one, then but let me know. And then do you have any other priorities right now? That
Everything actually has been doing pretty good. I drove around in the rainstorm on Tuesday. It was kind of crazy. I was working in Crawford Canyon. It wasn't raining at all there. It started to sprinkle, so I came down, and it was near flash flood conditions right here. Water was running down everywhere, and so I went. It's a good chance to go and see where is water running. Is it following what we think we wanted it to do? And that's when I noticed right over the top of Brian's head, you see that berm of dirt and the white rocks? I had left that so we could drive through there getting in and out. And I had partially blocked that. So all the water coming down into the east and around out into our big catchment was filling that culvert up to about 50% before it would flow through there. So I went and dug that out. But everything was flowing pretty nice. This is kind of a general notice to anybody. If you're out here and it's raining and you shouldn't be driving, please don't drive. But if you happen to be driving and you notice water ponding in somebody else's ruts, stop, take your shovel, do one or two scoops so that it exits the road, because in 10 minutes, that spot will be perfect. If it puddles there, it's going to take 3 or 4 days for that not to be a big mud hole, and every single person that drives through it, while it is a mud hole,
it's a bigger mud.
Magnifies.
Are you still putting money under rocks?
I am. I'm not telling anybody where or when or what, but I have and did, but yeah, Tina.
So Tuesday we had to drive, and between the cattle guard and Broad Hollow.
Yeah, it's pretty greasy.
We were sideways a little bit going around there. Is there plan to build it up?
Yes. Yep.
Soon-ish? I know there's always plans.
Yeah.
If not before July, then probably not this year.
No, I would say in the next 2 weeks. I haven't talked to Cade because we've been kind of running different directions, but there needs to be a couple more culverts. Michael Jordison sent me a notice last month, and between he and I, we were able to get some other culverts. I ended up just buying them myself because they're 18-inch, not 24-inch. And I can use them in other places. But then since then, the same guy that sold us those culverts called me. I just said, hey, if you ever have culverts available, let me know. I may or may not buy them. So last week I went up and got 6 more culverts. And then he called me again a couple of days ago and had some more. And I just said, hey, I'm tapped out cash-wise and time-wise. I can't get them. And I haven't been able to talk to Cade to see if he wants them. The problem is arranging, picking them up. And if they need them gone immediately... So,
where are they at?
Salt Lake.
Oh.
I just got a text like 2 minutes ago sitting here in the meeting that he's got 4 24-inch culverts. And so I said, hey, this weekend I can't get them, but maybe next week. So I'll see whether he can hold them that long.
Larry, I'm happy to pick them up and store them here until they can be brought down if you need them.
Okay. I was going to shoot you a message and just see, but the same guy, you know where it is.
Yeah.
He had 6 last week, and I passed on them just because I had – I've been going through money lately like it's crack cocaine.
Well, it's the crack cocaine that's making you go through your money.
That's where it's going.
Tribute to help you haul gravel.
Okay. Well, we need to make a couple of corrections on that section of road and then top it with something similar to the little lane going down to the Half Moon Well.
That'd be good.
So we're making progress. As far as roads, your other
priorities, slide got all messed up. But are you...
it really isn't horrible, though.
It's starting to level out.
Yeah, just from
driving.
Now, when you talk about slide, are you talking about the main road that goes all the way up? You're not talking about the little side road that goes up to the west. So the main road, which I hardly ever
use. Again, the biggest problem is just if you have to drive right when it's the inopportune time, you have to drive. But other people that have the option to choose when they drive, if you don't drive when it's miserable, it doesn't mess it all up. But we do need to go ahead and continue to crown and shape and provide for drainage. And again,
did I notice the start of a gravel pit bypass road?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Can you describe that?
So we've got a more of a straight line shot along the airstrip and the road leading up Meadow Canyon, and instead of curving to the left over toward the 40,000-gallon tank and then down off the hill and right through the middle of the machinery working in the gravel pit, there will be a straight shot off the hill, a much more gradual grade, and on up so that we can actually put up a barrier to prevent anybody from driving through the gravel pit area, because that is a pretty big liability, danger. It'd be simple in a big dump truck or a loader or a tractor to run over somebody on a four-wheeler or a pickup truck if they're not paying attention and coming around there too fast. So, yeah. So
well,
that
probably won't be done.
It won't take as long as you might think. I've already roughed out quite a bit of it, and then it's just a matter of. It's like I was telling somebody else. It's amazing what you can accomplish in an 8-hour or 10-hour day if you work 8 or 10 hours. But if you talk and drive and look and you waste a whole day getting nothing accomplished. But if you go get in the tractor and work all day.
And the equipment's all there and you don't have to haul it all the way across.
And don't have to break hydraulic lines and change oil and this, that, and the other. So it took longer to kind of rough it out than it will take to complete it. And there's a pretty good start. In fact, our ranch president has actually driven the road once. He won't do it again. But
I won't do it again until it's
ready.
Benign.
It's right now. It's still way too narrow. It's too steep. It's just the beginning of the upper side of the cut. It needs to be about four times as wide and taken down. And it will be. Right now, the county road, climbing the hill on this side and dropping off the hill on this side, are too steep. They shouldn't even be allowed. They don't meet the state's and county road requirements. That's why they turn into potholes and trying to climb up every hill. But so it'll be good when it's done, and it'll be done. That's my therapy, is go do that kind of stuff. But every once in a while, I have to do stuff that actually pays me money, so I can provide a roof over Danielle's head. That's why she has to move out. I can't afford the roof anymore, so she's got to go somewhere else.
Then I think the last topic, just I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but we were talking about getting grader, doing some grader classes and getting some people using the grader. Do we have any more thoughts on that?
I still think we will do it. It will probably be a month from now. Number one, the ranch grader is not operating correctly. It won't stay charged, so it's a problem to get it started and keep it running. My grader, I did get the motor going. I told last month that they blew up my motor, but I got another motor. They couldn't get it to run, and I finally took time to – I can't do everything by myself. I did. I got it running, and now I just have to get it back in the machine and out here. So,
how can we help get the grader going? Is there anything we can do?
That's probably going to be something with Brent and Kevin
Cool
just to determine why it's not charging, if it's not charging, if the batteries are beyond holding capacity, if they're just going to keep losing a charge.
I don't think it's an alternator.
I did had to change batteries in my swather and my grader,
and found some good industrial batteries for $119 each, the C31.
That's about half or a third price.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yep.
Okay. Well, if we determine these are bad, we'll holler at you, Dirk, to get some replaced.
Yeah.
Joan Smith asked a question. Doesn't association pay for culverts? How much do they cost?
So the association does pay for some culverts. In my opinion, I'm going to pick a road, for instance, just a simple short road that's a ranch road. I forgot what it's called. Quarter Horse Lane? Is that over here that goes up to Tim and Michelle's?
Yep.
They're the last ones on that road.
Yep.
If I were king of the world and I could say what should happen, you should not carry water super far. It needs to, if it's got a cross to one side or the other, and you're accumulating more and more and more water, it quickly becomes too much and begins to erode and cut. So in the length of our 20-acre parcels out here, that's 660 feet. I don't think we should be carrying, if there's any capacity to generate water, we shouldn't be carrying it further than that. And so, for instance, on Quarter Horse Lane, I would recommend that there be a culvert potentially at each property line so that the water that accumulates on Tim and Michelle's lot crosses the road and into the wash in a culvert. And then the water that accumulates on the Alderman lot gets in a culvert, crosses into the wash. And then the property that accumulates on the lot that we own accumulates and gets dumped in the wash. And then the, I forgot the name of the next owner down. There's another owner, and then Bob Hedman. So on that little short road, in the perfect world, there would be five or six culverts. Currently, there are two. On Meadow Canyon Road, we have 21 culverts between the gravel pit and the iron gate. There should be 40. We can get by with putting in bigger culverts, but you're still carrying water too far. As you guys drive up Meadow Canyon, pay attention to the sides of the road. How deep are the gutters, let's call them, on the sides of the road? There are some of the gutters along Meadow Canyon that are 4, 5, 6 feet deep. And I can tell you that it wasn't that long ago that they were 18 inches deep or 6 inches deep. There are particular spots just north of the cattle, the one mid drift fence. There's a cattle guard on Meadow Canyon Road. There's one just up here, but by the halfway to the Half Moon Reservoir area. The next cattle guard you cross is halfway to the fish ponds. At that cattle guard, if you drive 100 yards beyond the cattle guard, the erosion on the right-hand side of the road, the east side, is 4 or 5 feet deep today. 10 years ago, it was a foot deep. When Barbara Button was here, which is maybe, how long has she been gone? 20 years ago?
Almost 20 years.
Now. 20 years ago, I literally drove her car off the road and onto the side of the road. So it was drivable in a car, not a truck, not a four-wheel, not high clearance. And now if you tried that in a 4x4, a big good truck, you'd still get tipped over or stuck. That's because we've continued to carry water way too far in way too big of a volume that's eroded and eroded and eroded.
Well, to add to what you're saying, I think, so the ranch, our budget for culverts is only about $2,500. The rest, and we've pulled higher than that, but then taken away from
Robbing from somewhere.
Rob to do the other. So last year we bought almost $5,000 worth of culverts. Larry's been working on getting good deals for us. So we look for deals wherever we can, and we purchase them when we do that. But so the ranch is responsible for doing some culverts, but we prioritize road projects where members are willing to help out. And that usually comes in the form of culverts and stuff that way. So if a member is willing to come in and put the culverts and get the road to a point where it's not just putting a temporary fix on something, those roads get priority, where the members have been willing to put in a little bit of skin in the game pay for the culverts and we consult with Larry and make those happen. So that's kind of where we've been focusing is the ranch will purchase as we have money and funds to do it and put them in. But if you have a really strong desire for an area to be improved that really could use a culvert as well, that's going to purchasing the culvert will help prioritize that in our list of priorities.
I think part of the question was, generally speaking, what does a 16-foot, 24-inch culvert cost?
New one. So most of our roads, we need to have at least 30 feet to go across them. The last ones that we had purchased was almost $2,400 to get, what was it?
The
Jennifer, when she did
black, black plastic ABS culverts, a 24-inch diameter by 20-foot-long culvert is $850 for one. If they're the steel corrugated galvanized culverts, that same culvert is about $1,500. So they're not cheap. These that I've been getting from the guy in Salt Lake, that $850 culvert, I've been buying from him for $500. So that's a pretty significant discount. No, they're left over from other projects. So they're still brand new. I forgot what, so Jennifer, she, 3 years ago, Dan purchased culverts and got a section of the road leading into his corner of the ranch. It's not just his lot, but that area improved. And then last year, Jennifer Shearer bought culverts that went on another section of that road, and they bought three.
Well, we did two spots.
Two spots, but we cut 30, one culvert
yeah,
in half.
Yeah, so they bought three, but I think she paid almost $2,400. Yeah, so $800 apiece would be $2,400.
Yeah.
So she, that's, yeah. So we did two sections for $2,400 last time that we did them. So hopefully that answered the question. Danielle, I don't know.
No other comments
on that. So that's kind of the plan. So kind of ending this a little bit, we just need to work to get the grader going, and then hopefully, like mid-June-ish, we'll be doing something with the grader. Okay. That's all I've got for the roads.
Okay, Larry, I guess you've talked about your bypass road, so you don't need, unless you've got something else.
Just to report, we did stock the ponds on Thursday. It was supposed to come Monday, but because of the rain and the slick roads, the guys didn't want to bring the big heavy truck out here and just get stuck. So we brought them out Thursday. They stocked the ponds, pond one and pond two, with some beautiful rainbow trout.
And they're big.
And they're nice, good fish. We had a pretty good little crowd there. After the fish truck got gone, we cooked up some, beer battered halibut tacos, and we had, I don't know, there was 15, 20 people there. Pretty good show. And, Kathy Castle said, "Dad, this is pretty cool." And I said, "Well, we do this every single year." And she's like, "What?" I said, this is just the first year you came. I was just kidding. We should have done it every year, but we haven't. But we should do it every year. So, it was kind of fun, and I would be willing to do that. I would still like to do a pond cleanup improvement project there. And so maybe we'll do it again in July before I leave for Alaska, because I got to get rid of a bunch more salmon and a bunch more halibut, because I don't want to have old stuff still in the freezer when I bring the new stuff down. After the fish fry, we came down and with Jeff and Tina and Brent, we got that test station installed on the 40,000-gallon tank. Went pretty slick.
Got Brent tipsy off that leftover.
Yeah, I had a little bit of adult beverage left over from cooking the fish,
and I took care of that. I didn't want to see it contaminate the earth.
I don't know what else I've got.
To wildlife? Report. Any wildlife updates?
Nothing.
Ryan Castle had two rattlesnakes already.
Oh wow, that's a good announcement. Be watching out for rattlesnakes. They are already out.
I picked up a piece of flagstone yesterday, and there was
snake under it.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
So
good to know.
They are out.
Actually, speaking of pond cleanup, so you know where we were parked is all grassy.
Yes.
Off to the, so if you're looking at the cabins off to the left, it's all sagebrush, garbage, crap. Can I go mow that down?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
You have permission.
Like, I don't want it to hurt anything and spread seeds and make a, you know, like a worse problem or whatever. So
if I see you doing it, I'll shut it down.
There's any way you can cause any damage or increased growth or anything like that.
But how do you get rid of all the willows?
The willows, we almost have to just cut, hand cut, which I talked to Tina a little bit about it, that we need to have another fish fry up there and have 30 people with loppers.
Just start lopping them.
Or an axe. The problem with mowing the willows is you create a million little tire puncher.
Yep.
Right. They're just going to wrap around him.
Yeah, the willows wad up in most mowers. So you're better off to hand cut them, and it's a pain, but it's amazing what...
I don't know if I want my tractor that close to the water.
Yeah.
Because I'll be upside down, you know.
I've got a big flail mower that's on an arm so you can drive along and reach out and mow stuff, and but you've got to have the right cutter-type heads so you're not just wrapping all those long, bendy, flexible willows will just wad up in the machines.
Right. I just figured, like, when you go in there, at least if all of that area on your right is all mowed down, it would be a little more enticing.
There's no big rocks or anything he has to
watch out. There is.
There really shouldn't be. Most of that should be clear of rocks, but obviously pay attention. The worst thing I did was I ate a roll of barbed wire somebody had left, a complete roll sitting in, and the rabbit brush had grown all up around it. So I was mowing away, and all of a sudden, and my drive shaft looked like a rubber band. It just
when I did the well filled area, it shut off my tractor.
Yeah.
I mean, what the heck was that?
And a one little tractor mower that I run is, I mean, it's a pretty, it's a 75 horsepower. Which sounds pretty low, but that's actually pretty high powered for a small tractor. And it took that drive shaft and just wound it up, shortened it from about a 2 foot drive shaft down to about a 9 inch long drive shaft and pulled off both couplers on each end. And it was
better than ruining the transmission.
It is for sure, but it took a ton of time just to get the wire out of the reel. And then to rebuild the drive shafts and make sure that the splines and the transmission and the gearbox weren't ruined. So it's like, that's not a good thing to hide a roll of wire in sagebrush.
Probably.
Okay, I don't have anything else.
All right, Mike.
Okay, a couple things. Fire engine. Do we have a plan for getting the fire engine?
I was going to bring it out today, and I just didn't have time because I slept in to put the batteries back in it and drive it out because Danielle was going to come out and I thought, she can drive my truck. I'll drive the fire engine. So maybe this next week.
So sometime soon.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we had tentatively planned on doing some kind of a project in July to build an enclosure here at the ranch for it, to protect it. And we need to figure that out. Where is it going to be? What's it going to take to put together some kind of an enclosure so we can start planning for that?
Okay.
What is your thought in terms of where it's going to actually be housed?
Well, I'm going to reach out to Bob Becker on his rodent-proof little enclosure he puts his Jeep in, and I want him to expand that, and then we will transport it over here.
When you need it.
And now, Bob did a really good job. He made a rodent-proof enclosure against his container that he parks his Jeep in, and it's pretty impressive.
So, Bob, we're talking about building a rodent-proof enclosure for our new fire engine. And Brent is saying you're the guy with the expertise.
I am? I got a canvas enclosure I'll give you guys.
Bob, we're going to pick your brain, whatever's left of it.
No. Okay, so we're going to put together a project to build an enclosure, rodent-proof enclosure for our new fire engine. Tentatively talking July, that could push back, but yeah, we want to build a really nice enclosure for our really nice new fire engine and have that be a volunteer project so we can get lots of folks to help out with that. So I just wanted to get that on the radar.
Okay.
And then, secondly, I still have all of the extra fire department equipment in my garage.
Okay.
So we have several breathing apparatus backpacks and masks and flotation devices.
Did you ever try putting any of them on?
No, I haven't done anything with it. So that's my question is, what do we want to do with it?
Yesterday I helped one of our other Deer Springs members move a big, like 40-foot fifth wheel from Cedar City to Kanab. Larry Bear's son, Larry Bear's daughter's husband, so they don't have the same name. Scott King works with the King County Fire, Kanab City Fire and Ambulance Rescue stuff. He may be a resource to talk to say, is there any of this stuff that you guys can use?
Mm-hmm.
I would almost propose, I mean, it'd be nice if we can make a dollar or two from it, but to me, I don't want to store it no matter what. Yeah. And I don't want you to have to store it no matter what. It's better if it's usable and they want to give us a dollar, great. If they want to just take it.
If they can use it and we can donate it, then
yeah. I don't know if that gives us any tax.
You know, there's some things that I just quit worrying about, and if somebody can use it, let him have it. It'll be out of his garage, it'll be out of my hair, and I'll have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah. So Scott King is the contact. Do you have a phone number you could
give me? I do. I'll give it to you right now.
Okay.
But if that doesn't work, there's no opposition to just putting it on Facebook and seeing where it goes either, right?
Yep.
So
I don't use Facebook. Just so somebody else.
The time and effort it takes to snap pictures and post it. Everything is like just here. You have it. Happy birthday.
I'll call this guy first. Yeah. I'll call this guy first. See what he says. And if they don't want it or don't need it, then I'll send you pictures. I already have pictures.
If you got pictures for me, just send them to me. Then I'll be glad to manage that.
Okay.
435.
Okay.
899-1512.
Anything else, Mike?
That?
Nope, that's it for me.
The road sign guy.
That's the same name, but different guy. His son, Scott King, which is another Scott King, works at Lumber Plus. You probably know him, kind of a tall, bigger guy. That's Scott King Jr.
Barry, you have anything else?
I have nothing more to add. Everybody's saying, praise the Lord.
Dirk, do you have anything to add?
Dirk, anything else from you?
And Ben, if you're on, be thinking. Gotta get these guys on the phone. Come on.
And the answer is no.
Okay.
Ben, do we have an update on signs?
Dirk, do you have an update on Ben?
Well, no.
I can call him. I mean, we're getting into the season. I'd really like to see those signs go up, the signs we talked about, because if we get halfway through the summer, then we've missed half the traffic. So I'll follow up with them.
Okay. The only thing I've got to add onto all this is on Thursday, while you guys were having your fish fry, I was busy shuttling equipment up to the 40,000-gallon tank. And then I thought you guys would be done because I didn't know about the fish fry. And so I thought you guys would be done, so I decided to start walking, and I figured one of you guys would pick me up.
And so only did we party and eat without him, nobody gave him a ride, and he had to walk.
Nobody saw it, but what took me the time to walk to my house wasn't the walking time. It was because of your putting money under rocks. I was stopping.
He's looking down the ivory rock.
And I'm turning it over. I don't have time for that, Larry. You got to stop. So, anyway. All right.
Brent.
Brent.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yep.
I apologize. Trying to get this thing off mute on a different format is near impossible. So, my quick update. The signs have not arrived, so I will report as soon as they are and work with to get those installed. I have looked at I don't know if anybody has a preference, or I'm going to ask later as far as the post they go on. Would it be better if they're like a 4x4 post or a cedar post, or I have some metal, you know, galvanized like 2-inch that hold up a chain link fence, but will that, you know, be kind of ugly sitting out there? Again, I know the important thing is just to get them in, so I'll report on that.
I prefer we get a 4x4, dig a post hole, throw them in the ground, and then bolt the sign face to the post. That's simple and
looks better.
It's hard to get them to stay on a fence post where it's round. That gives you a flat surface. Anyway.
Okay, I'll get those prepared.
Yes. Yeah,
and,
the green as soon as they arrive.
Secondly, I just want to, unless somebody else wants to, I just want to give a brief report. I and Dirk also went to the presentation on the revegetation of the burn area east of Deer Springs. So if anybody has questions, I'm going to try to get – I signed up for the email, and I'll pass to everybody their PowerPoint presentation. Cameron McQuivy, that's the wildlife biologist, gave that, and there's some incredible before and after pictures of watching that vegetation, something that, you know, was very interesting that we'll use on association ground and stuff around there. I don't know how much anybody else is interested, but they did spend about $5 million flying on native seed, and they railed with chain to tip over the timber several thousand acres and went in with about 1,000 acres that they used hog to shed the vegetation, and they have these different test plots to see how they rebound and which ones germinate best and stuff. So they have it really cataloged, and something that I think is a huge benefit for our area and elevation to have a good comparison of vegetating after this fire and other areas that then we would consider maybe in them in control burn or action we take as far as reducing fuel areas in the urban interface, but not causing a problem that's just going to grow invasive weeds.
So it doesn't look like they knocked down all of the trees. Is that part of their plan in the future? Or they just, that's a different.
Right. They have they didn't do any of the hillsides where it was, you know, steep. They did the bulldozer, like I said. I think that they said that they used the chain to stir the soil and knock down the trees after they had flown on the seed. So, again, the chaining is not to knock down the trees as much as stir the soil to incorporate the seed so that it will germinate. But they've documented, like I said, about 6 different areas, and they have a good map to know areas they flew on seed but did not disturb it at all, or areas that they did chain, or areas that they did mulch, so they can see how each one reacts. They just tried to spend the money as far as it would go, and they did announce. They only flew on native seed, and what they did was $4 million just for the cost of the seed. So it's extremely expensive for the native grass seeds that they put in there. There is a little area they've designated as the Mule Deer Corridor that comes up through there that they have planted some forbs and some trees and stuff like bitterbrush that they really, you know, feed on to try to minimize any damage from the wildlife. They'll keep the livestock off. They did lose about 15 miles of fence that they have to put back in about 5 miles right now just to keep cattle out of that area for the 2-year period and then work on putting that back in. So that's there was one other interesting point. But, again, I'll get that so that you can see. It will be super interesting to see how it progresses the next couple of years. They were very happy once they flew on the seed. It did rain in late September and October, and some of the stuff that, as hot as that fire was,
it was extremely hot and burned areas that if you take the pictures, I would have typically thought that's not really a fire hazard up through there. Well, when, you know, when the wind's blowing and it's that hot, it carries through areas I was surprised in, especially when it's going uphill up those canyons. They are happy though, at, you know, the roots and even a lot of grasses, the, herbologist or whatever had photographs where he's dug up. You can see the burn line and then where things are resprouting.
Good news. I saw that they had all the mulchers up there. I thought those mulchers might be for the new area that they're working on, but must have been for the old
stuff. Yeah, that was all for the fire recovery, and they've hauled them all out now.
Yeah,
they did. Where did they plant the cash crop plot? You know,
the good stuff.
The good stuff, yeah, those are in, it's called Hidden Canyon.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you and Dirk were able to go to that. I was mad that was...
So short notice.
Yeah, they didn't really let us know, or we weren't paying attention, one or the other, or both, because I wanted to go to that.
A lot of it you'll be able to see. I'll get the, send you, like I said, the maps and the photographs, they are all geolocated where they will update and take, so you can see a good, yep, that's the same, you know, hill line and tree line even over the next 5 years. And so, you know, I've been interested and studied this for 40 years and places where if the photo doesn't exactly line up, it's a little confusing. And so everybody here has access to Cameron McQuivey at the local office is very helpful. That's the knowledgeable one. He was there as a firefighter during the fire. And, you know, it's kind of the local person, I think, to follow up on it.
Is Cameron also in the staircase office or in the field office?
Well, they're both out of the same office here in Kanab under, you know, they have two different bosses. And I think as the wildlife biologist.
He's worked for a day in the Grand Staircase.
Okay.
But just for interesting fact, their budget for this restoration project was $4.5 million.
They probably won't get it again. It goes. Hey, anything else?
Nope. I just wanted to share that so that those that are, you know, interested, and just to drive out there and look at, take your own pictures and kind of watch, because I think it is a valuable tool and will be a great benefit near, you know, in they're excited about the whole, you know, Colorado Plateau area to be able to have the funds and run this kind of experiment.
And you're going to forward the PowerPoint to us, right, when you get it?
Yes, as soon as I get it. I think maybe Dirk signed up, but I will just, yeah, I'll send that email to the group.
Thanks.
And thanks you and Dirk to go into that. I would have liked to have gone, but I was busy with something else. Walking home. Okay, members. All right. I'm going to next meeting is the June 14th at 10 a.m. in person here at the headquarters plus Zoom. And I'm going to make a motion that we adjourn this meeting.
Second.
Aye.
Aye. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, thanks for coming. Mention my name.
Level 7, how did we all line up with your